This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Eek. Are you signing up your child for coding classes because you want her to be a tech tycoon, or for singing and dancing class to turn your child into the next YouTube star? So this practice of putting children on an intensive and accelerating learning path has many names. Some people call it hot housing. Other terms are helicopter parenting or over parenting, which gives you an idea of its potentially negative impact. So are parents really helping their kids by equipping them with these skills starting from an early age, or are we over-parenting children today? To discuss this, we have Dr. Rajini Savanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician in the studio. Good afternoon, Dr. Rajini. How are you?
Fine, thank you, Sherry.
Can we get back to basics, actually, and talk about the idea of childhood? What does childhood actually mean from your perspective?
Childhood is the period where children are growing up before they start to hit adolescence. And so, you know, we use the term childhood from when they're born right up to when, you know, just before they're approaching their teens. And of course, you know, you divide childhood into infancy, the first year, toddlers, which up to 3 years old, and then the rest of childhood. You know, some people would say they are still children until they become adults at 18 or when they leave home, although nowadays most children don't leave home because it's too expensive. But, yes. You know, generally until you become or you're able to stand on your own two feet.
Yeah. So then a lot of parents now look at childhood, or at least if we define it as the phase before you learn to stand on your own feet, before you strike out on your own, a lot of parents see it as the time to decide on that individual child's future career path and what they should, what kind of life should they lead in adulthood. What are your thoughts on that?
I think parents generally will worry about their children's future. And I think most parents, think about what their children are going to become and try as much as possible to provide for their children beyond just feeding them, housing them, and making sure that, you know, their physical needs are met. I guess the problem lies when parents start to dictate what their children should do in the future, or push their children too much because they're so worried that their child cannot get into the best university or hold down the best job. And so I think it's when those intentions come in and guide their parenting that then it becomes a problem.
So how should we look at the idea of learning during childhood? What's the basic philosophy that should drive the way that children learn and what they learn?
I think, you know, what's important is that we realize that children learn best actually from watching what's around them. And at the end of the day, we are their role models, and they pick up a lot from those who spend the most time with them and those who spend what I call quality time with them, i.e. your parents or your caregivers. There's this notion that children also are going to learn from the television, you know, are going to learn from their tablets and the phones and things like that. But we all, you know, research has shown it's what they see around them in real life that actually is what they remember the most, as in it's sort of etched in your memory and you use that, as opposed to something that you watch on a 2D. Many children are not able to then replicate that in real life situations. So I think that's one thing we need to remember. I think another thing we need to remember is if we are the role models, then we need to be bringing out the best of ourselves. And, the experiences that we give children should be the best and the most holistic experiences. And for me, learning is not about going into a classroom or into an enrichment program. Those may be additional things that help to reinforce learning that you may get in real life. But, you know, it's also what you do on a day-to-day basis with your child. And I think one of the things that we must not forget is that we need to be very aware that we need to be teaching our children empathy from a very young age. And sometimes that's something that we forget as parents in our drive to get our children to achieve.
Yeah. So looking at what parents do with their children today in this generation, do you think that we are balancing that well between giving them some skills that can reinforce and sort of prepare them for the future against learning actual values like empathy?
You know, Shao, you just have to look at mental health statistics in this country to know that something is going wrong somewhere. You know, the National Health Morbidity Survey showed that the number of children showing symptoms of anxiety and depression are what, 2 in 5 now? Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a worrying trend. And that's telling us that something is happening here, that that's not right. Yeah. I see it as two sets of not just two, but, you know, the two main groups are those who are struggling to make ends meet. And I think they are a big part of our society that we forget. You know, just putting food on the table or nutritious food on the table. Parents who are not able to be there with their children because they're working, having two jobs, yeah. And at the same time, they put that pressure on their children saying, you know, I'm working so that you can go to school and you can get good grades and you can make a better person of yourself so you don't end up like me. Then you have the parents who have it materially, who really are pushing their children by overscheduling them with so many activities because they want them to get into Oxford or Cambridge or, you know, the best universities, so-called, and I put that in inverted commas, or they want them to be child prodigies and you know. So you have two extremes to some extent. And in both those situations, children are being put under pressure.
Okay. A lot of these practices are starting from a younger and younger age now.
Yes.
So could you help us understand if there's a right age for children to start going for any sort of enrichment classes? And in terms of the pace of learning, according to their development, how do parents know? Even if a child is interested, for instance, in learning coding or piano or something extra, what's the right age to let them start learning those?
I think, you know, what is the right age to send a child for an enrichment class? That's a difficult question. You know, that when we're born, our brains are ready to learn. They're learning already. And they're learning even before they come out to some extent. Hence why, you know, people say the more you talk to your kids, you know, and they come out, they sort of quiet into your voice when they're distressed, yeah, when you're pregnant. And hence now you even hear of companies selling music. Well, people don't use CDs anymore, but, you know, in my time, it was starting already, you know, music CDs for your baby, so they become little Einsteins.
Now you have them on YouTube.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yes, the brain is ready to learn. It doesn't need an enrichment class for a young child or a child between the ages of 0 and 2, which is when we see rapid brain development or rapid learning happening. They say you learn the most in the first 2 years of your life. And in fact, you learn more in those first 2 years of your life than you do right up to university, because those are when you rapidly develop skills, yeah, which really set you for your next stage in life for learning. So hence why you see so many enrichment classes now, baby sensory classes, gym classes and things like that. You have to ask yourself why they've come about. And I personally think they've come about for a few reasons. Families have become more isolated. So they depend on some of these classes to network with other families. Mm-hmm. Number two, I think we are now depriving our children of exposure to the outdoors. So we think that replacing them with these classes is going to help. And you know, is that right? Is that wrong? In a way, we say it's best for children to learn in their natural environment. Mm-hmm. So to some extent, we say it's better to climb a rambutan tree than to maybe go to a gym class if you really want to pick up skills.
Yes, but we don't have rambutan trees.
We don't have rambutan trees anymore, hence why these enrichment classes have come about. So children are always going to be ready to learn. When are they ready to go to an enrichment class? Again, I think it boils down to why you're sending your child to that enrichment class, because that is going to drive your actions. For example, if your aim is just to go and socialize, you won't be too perturbed if your child can't do that front row when everybody else can. Mm-hmm. Okay. But, you know, if you're that sort of parent who wants your child to be the best at everything, or that sort of authoritarian parent who says, you better learn to do that front role and push your child to do it, that is going to have ill effects on your child.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're talking about the practice of hot housing or oven parenting. I mean, there are many terms that describes this practice of sort of putting children on an intensive learning path early in childhood with the idea that we want to be preparing them for their future. But we have consultant developmental pediatrician Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan in the studio to help us understand what the potential implications of this could be. So when we come back from the break, I'd like to still look a little bit at the potential impact of this on the child in terms of, you've mentioned a little bit about the psychological impact, Dr. Rajini, but also brain development, whether intensive learning in one area could be impairing their ability to just learn in a more well-rounded manner. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiao Ik. In the studio with me, consultant developmental pediatrician, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan. We are discussing the sort of fairly modern trend, I suppose, of hot housing, which is this practice of putting children on an accelerated learning path. What we see around us, signing children up for baby ballet, piano from a young age, coding classes, robotics, basically anything that where parents think that it could help the children develop these skills for a future career. And it's not that new, actually, Dr. Rajini, is it? I have to correct myself a bit because when I was growing up, it was similar, the practice of piano classes, extra tuition to help you do better in school. But I suppose it's just become a bit more intense today.
Yeah.
But you talked a little bit about if we just look at the statistics showing anxiety, stress and depression in children and young people today, we get an idea of how their childhood today is affecting them. But what about in terms of brain development? If you are putting very young children on an intensive learning schedule, how could it possibly impact their overall brain development and social development as well?
If you focus too much on one area and you neglect, say, for example, you're only focusing on gym classes or getting your child to do physical activities, it's not that the rest of the brain is not going to develop, that it doesn't work that way. The brain is, you know, has a series of networks, and sometimes stimulating one part of the brain helps another part of the brain. Hence why we say music helps children in terms of focus or, you know. So it's not that you're going to neglect it. And if, like I said, if, you know, say, for example, you're sending them to a gym class and it if it's for babies, hopefully, or toddlers, hopefully it incorporates a little bit of music and, you know, so there is some overall benefit. So it's not going to be harmful from that perspective. But again, it comes back to the stress you put on your child. And actually, sometimes these classes are not the issue, but the person directing the child. And you can imagine that if you are constantly at your child, no, do it this way, no, do it that way, you're going to create anxiety in that child. And we know that. And, you know, over-parenting is sometimes seen to be equivalent to the authoritarian type of parenting that that has been described previously. I mean, mm-hmm. we have different types of parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And the authoritarian type of parenting is when you push your child and you are extremely strict and you have very strict boundaries and limits. So we know that that style of parenting results in increased anxiety symptoms and stress-related illnesses. And we also know that that style of parenting often is associated with lack of warmth and in terms of how you do it. And I don't think parents sometimes feel that they are not, you know, to some parents, this is how they love their children or this is how they show their love. And maybe they don't understand that that may not be the right way.
Mm.
So it does trigger anxiety from a very young age. And we know that anxiety from a young age is linked with anxiety as an adult as well. So, you know, parents forget what you do to your children now may not show up as a problem until adulthood. And to some extent, you know, some pediatricians see this as also emotional abuse when it gets taken to a real extreme,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you're depriving your child of socializing with the rest of his peers because, no, you have to go for your tuition, then ballet, then music, then, you know, art class and things like that. And so that's why we need to have a balance. Sometimes these classes provide social opportunities mm-hmm. for children, especially if they come from single child families
mm-hmm.
or very isolated families. So it's hard, but, you know, sometimes when you overschedule your kids, you are depriving them socially of being around other people.
Yeah. What have you seen in terms of, I mean, the term anxiety, the children manifest it in different ways
yes.
as well. So how do we know if children are facing anxiety, having stress-related disorders? What can we look out for?
Okay, so children, young children, express stress and anxiety in different ways. Quite often it presents with them coming to you saying they've got a headache or a tummy ache, and you see that it happens frequently, often related to probably the stressor, for example, going to school, okay? Or, for example, before they have to go for their piano class, if they have a very strict teacher or, you know, they find that they're stressed in that setting. We know that actually stress-related illnesses in children, the incidence is increasing. We're talking about things like gastritis, ulcers, you know, general musculoskeletal sort of complaints. We see that increasing in children as well. So one is the physical, or what we say, the somatic symptoms that children present. The other thing is children who are anxious don't always look withdrawn. They can sometimes present with behavioral changes. They can sometimes become aggressive. A passive child suddenly starts biting in school or, you know, starts yelling in school or even at home. And this behavior change is something that should alert parents that something is not going on.
Okay. And do parents themselves recognize what they're doing? Because it's a bit of a slippery slope as well. Once you get started on it, and then you add on more expectations or more demands on your child without realizing it.
I think you just have to look at some of the young talents there are out there, you know, tennis superstars. I think it was Steffi Graf who talked about her father pushing her. All these young athletes, young prodigies, sometimes, you know, when you hear their stories later on, then you understand what they've gone through. Mm-hmm. Some people would say, hey, why are you complaining? You've earned millions mm-hmm. from what your parents did for you.
Yeah.
But, you know, it then has an impact on relationships. It has an impact on the emotional well-being of that person. I think we have to remember that material wealth isn't everything in life. You know, the richest people can be the most miserable people. And it's, as parents, I think sometimes we have to take a step back, think about what we want from our children. I mean, if you ask parents, what do you want for your child, I think most parents will say to you, I want my child to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, but sometimes when you're caught up in this rat race of raising kids, you forget that. And, you know, you're talking about Mr. X next door, his child's already achieved grade 8 piano at the age of, you know, 10 years old, and your child's still stuck at grade 2. For some parents, that's, oh my goodness, my child's a failure.
Mm.
But I think, you know, you have to step back again and say, why am I giving my children these opportunities? It's not wrong to expose children to a variety of things. But again, you know, how far are you pushing them? Are you giving them some free time? And always remember that free play is and allows a child to build their creativity. Yeah, it doesn't always have to be structured. And it's the same with when you send your children for music classes. It doesn't have to be that only through these music classes your children are going to develop their musical talents.
Yeah,
but
okay.
If you give them an instrument and just let them play it or create their own music, yeah.
But there's also that idea that structured classes are a way to teach children skills other than the concrete skills they're learning.
Mm.
So the idea of going for music class teaches them discipline, for instance, or
yeah.
time management
yeah.
or responsibility.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, and I agree to some extent. Yes, it does. Because, you know, in a way, in different activities, you gain different things. But I think my concern is that, you know, you're not just doing that one activity. If, say, you're coming home after school, you're exhausted. You then have a tuition class, followed by a music class, followed by homework, and there's no free time for you to play. That's unhealthy.
Mm.
So the positive effects get lost.
And, okay, we've heard a lot about free play, especially during earlier childhood, toddlerhood, and perhaps even the preschool ages. But how about when we start going into the primary and secondary ages? What's the best way for children to learn?
You know, sometimes just give them their own time to decide what they're going to do with their own time. You hope that by having guided them in the early years about, you know, getting them into a routine of making sure they have enough sleep, that their meals are on time, that aspect of it is discipline. Because, you know, sleep, having adequate food and water and all that is important. And hopefully you've instilled that when they're younger. So by the time they reach school age, they know, oh, whatever it is, my bedtime is 8:30 or 9 o'clock. You know, I need to have that sleep. In a way, when they're older, you still need to give them that free time where, you know, let them think about what they want to do, whether it's just doodling or, you know, hopefully that free time isn't spent on the gadget.
Mm.
But this is often where parents start to say, oh, but if I give them free time, they'll go on the gadget.
Mm.
But if you've guided them from a young age that you only have your gadget at certain times, it's easier when they're older as well. And you find those children who've had boundaries set for different aspects of their life, whether it be TV or gadget time, whether it be outdoor playtime, whether it be bedtime, you find that if if that's been going on from birth right up to when they're preschoolers, by the time they enter school age, yes, they do need parents' guidance, but, you know, it gets easier rather than starting at that point.
Okay.
So I think that discipline doesn't just come from the enrichment classes.
Mm.
It comes from how you parent your kids. And that free play should continue that into free time to allow children to do what they want.
You know, I keep coming back to for me, the sticking point with the enrichment classes and the idea that I want my child to have this particular skill set because this is the what he needs for this tech age, for instance, mm-hmm. Or you know, just whatever that parents think is going to guarantee a successful career in the future. Does that make sense? If you start them coding at the age of three, mm-hmm. they're going to be a coding genius when they grow up. How much of a child's individual, you know, abilities and personality plays a role in the next, 17, 18 years?
Okay. Interestingly, Xiaoyi, the biggest predictor of whether or not your child is going to be successful is not your IQ or the specific skills mm. that you're talking about, like learning coding, but it's actually your self-regulation skills.
All
and
right.
there's been studies that show that if you have children who have poor self-regulation skills, and if that carries on into adulthood, that these children are often going to be more likely to end up having addictions, be in trouble with the law, and actually not be as successful in their careers.
Could you explain what self-regulation
is? Mm-hmm. Self-regulation is your coping skills, basically, in how you respond to social demands of society to some extent. So it's your ability to regulate your emotions, your impulses, mm-hmm. and in that way respond appropriately. Okay.
Okay.
So if you look at children, they have temper tantrums, right? But over time, those temper tantrums should improve. And if that happens, then, and children tend to be able to control themselves, you find that that is a positive thing that carries on into adulthood. A lot of our people who have road rage issues, those are people who have not learned self-regulation,
mm.
you know, and it's been shown now that you can have a very high IQ, but if your EQ is not high, you will not be successful. And in fact, some people say the EQ is more important than the IQ.
Mm.
You know, just because you go to Cambridge doesn't mean that you're going to be more successful than somebody who hasn't even been to university.
Mm.
You know, it's about that self-motivation, self-regulation. And if you look at EQ, self-regulation is a big part of it because it determines how you're going to react to people
mm-hmm.
and even how you're going to cope with your own failures and successes as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think skills, you know, coding. I still remember when I was in secondary school that friends of mine were being sent for computer classes. Right. And what was it in those days? It was MS. I don't know. You know, things have evolved so much.
Yes.
Right.
Mm.
Are we using what we learned in those days?
MS-DOS, I think.
MS-DOS, yes. MS-DOS, gosh. Are we using that now?
Mm.
You know, I mean, yes, maybe it gave them some basic computer skills, but It you know, you can have these skills, but you can lose the skills if you don't keep using them.
Mm.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So if it's not something that you're using in your day-to-day life, then yes. I'm not saying don't send your kids for coding classes. There may be other benefits from coding classes, like it improves your processing speed or whatever. But if your intention of sending them for coding classes is, I want him to be a tech genius, then don't, you know. And if your child starts to show disinterest in coding class, maybe you want to take a step back and say, okay, maybe this isn't working. Mm-hmm. Let's take a break and let's try again later when they're more interested in it.
Mm. And how do we help children develop those self-regulation skills then and that EQ? Because you know, I wouldn't want it to get to a point where they start offering classes for that as well. You know, what is it that we need to do within our families?
Remember, we are the role models. So how we approach situations is going to be a big part of how children learn. Not just us, but teachers in schools, you know, the community that they're exposed to as well. And, you know, I think this is where we as a society need to sort of wake up, and instead of focusing on let's get coding into our schools and let's get, you know, these language classes into our schools, etc., maybe we need to start thinking about let's teach our children to help each other. Let's teach our children to keep our classrooms clean, our toilets clean. You know, look at the Japanese kids. They learn about cleaning the environment that they learn in. And that's why when you go to Japan, it is such a different city from many other cities. You know, many of the cities are clean and people are very proud and conscious, and it becomes part of their life. So I think it's doing those sort of things. And I, you know, I'm very much for this new system where there are no examinations in schools for the first 3 years. Because I can tell you when you know, from my own experience, when streaming came into my daughter's school, kids as young as seven were worried at the end of year one which class they were going to be put into. And that's unhealthy, you know, because they already start to see themselves as being different to the kid who maybe didn't do so well.
Yeah.
And you've lost that empathy that you taught them all those years when they're younger.
Yeah. And also, you know, just sort of building on that point a little bit, hot housing obviously caters for the typically developing child. But, you know, if we are talking about wanting to be inclusive as well, what does this do to non-typically developing children? Is it creating a bigger gap?
Yes, it is. I mean, don't think that there aren't parents with children with special needs who are not over-parenting. There are, because you know, they too have set expectations of their children, and they think if I send my child to all these classes, his fine motor skills are going to be okay, and then he's going to start writing. So it happens even with children with special needs. I think, yes, hot housing may create this gap, but I'd rather not worry about that when, you know, I worry about individual children in terms of how that overparenting affects them. And if they're anxious and they're starting to get stressed, they're not going to be able to socialize with any child, you know, be it their peers in their classroom. Forget about the kids that who have special needs. But yeah, and you sometimes find that parents who overparent sometimes sort of say, oh, you know, you're smart, you're great at this. You can't compare yourself to that person because they're not good at it, you know? And that sort of negative statements does sometimes affect children, and they start to think themselves as being different or superior to some extent.
Okay. So perhaps as a final word, how do we stop? How do we get off this rat race?
I think, you know, it's important for parents to step back and think about what values they want from their children first. Or if they want their children to be happy, you know, what makes them happy? Yeah, you know, sometimes parents feel they want to provide for their children because as they were growing up, they were not allowed to attend some of these classes because, you know, whether their parents couldn't afford it or their parents focused too much in one area, they were deprived of this. But I think we shouldn't do to our children what we feel we have been deprived of. So step back, think about what values you want your children to have in this world. Skills can be learned. You know, I'm learning things about computers from my own children, you know, because things are changing so fast. And it doesn't mean that if you learn a skill today, that skill is still going to be applicable in future. Yeah, it may give you a base to start with. So think about values and what important skills children need in life and equip them to be able to navigate themselves through different things in life and allow them to fall, allow them to fail, because nowadays we have a lot of children who have anxiety because parents have been protecting their children so much from failure that they don't know what to do. And that creates stress and anxiety in children. And that's what we're seeing in our teens. So I think, you know, think about these things.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Rajini. You know, we will be sort of continuing this conversation, expanding on it at our Health and Living Junior event on the 5th of October. Unfortunately, Dr. Rajini won't be there, but we have a lot of other experts on children's development, education, psychology, to discuss how parents can balance all these pressures and expectations for children today. And at the same time, not overprotecting or over-sheltering them. And we also have Deputy Minister for Women, Family and Community Development, YB Hannah Yeo. So you can get more information on how to register at bfm.my/health event. Thank you very much, Dr. Rajini. You've been listening to Consultant Developmental Pediatrician Dr. Rajini Savarnandan talking about the practice of over-parenting today. You're listening to Health and Living on a Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.